Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. And on today's show, we're going to try something new, Jesse. We have two guests in studio with us and one on the phone from Dublin.
Yeah, this is very exciting. We're very official. We've all got headsets on, and we're excited to have our guest over across the pond.
All right. So with us today is Tiva Dawson and Matt Greiner from Group Creative Services. They're both partners, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Jesse, why don't you get us started today?
Okay, I'm Jesse Lowry, Director of Conservation and Research at Blank Park Zoo, and I always like to start the show off by setting the stage and talking about the role of a modern zoo in saving animals in the wild. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, recreation, education, and research. Basically, I see it as a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community and schools and families to come and have a fun, affordable day out. We've surveyed our audience, and we know that's what they want. They want to come to the zoo and see some animals and have some fun, and we're privileged to provide the opportunity to the community. But while they're here, we want to inspire them to care more and do something to help save wildlife, something that's actually going to make a difference to the world. We've got an audience of 500,000 people, and so we've got this fantastic platform, this opportunity, and I think responsibility to get messages out about conservation, especially during this time of such a changing landscape for wildlife around the world. So as an accredited zoo of AZA, or the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, we do conservation in many different ways. We work to be as sustainable as possible in our daily operations and encourage our public to do so. We just started a new campaign called Stomp the Straw, where we have an online pledge where individuals can say that they're going to refuse plastic straws at restaurants and when they're eating out, and also a pledge for restaurants to say they will only provide them upon request. Some folks might think that straws are really no big deal, but it's approximately 7% of all ocean plastic is the single-use plastic straw. And so it's really meant to raise awareness about all of our consumptive uses and how they really do have a direct impact on wildlife. Of course, we breed endangered animals. This is through the Species Survival Plan. And basically, it's like an online dating system for endangered animals. We know all the genetics of the endangered animals that we have, and we pair them up to make sure we have a robust captive population. And of course, our most famous baby is Tumani, our eastern black rhino. There's only 800 left in the whole world. That's captivity and the wild combined. So Tumani and her family is an insurance policy against the poaching crisis. It's to hedge against extinction. But the backbone of what a zoo can do is to support field projects, those folks and organizations that are out on the front line working to save wildlife all over the world. And we give a portion of every dollar that we make to Giraffe Conservation Foundation in Namibia, to International Rhino Foundation in Indonesia, and to Hornbill Research Foundation in Thailand, and many other projects. Those people working out in the range countries of the animals that we have here and some that we don't. But if you want to get the most bang for your buck, saving the local environment is the way to go. And so you can go on the zoo's website and check out our Plant Grow Fly program, encouraging people to plant butterfly gardens for bees and butterflies. And really, everybody who supports Blank Park Zoo, even if you visit on a Sunday afternoon and buy an ice cream cone, a portion of that revenue is going to all these projects. And so it's just really a neat opportunity to engage the community and teach them about these beautiful, charismatic animals that we have here at the zoo and just how easy it is to save them. Ryan, you remember when we had the ZAC conference here, the Zoos and Aquariums Committing to Conservation Conference in 2013. And were you able to hear Joel Sartori speak?
Oh, he's a great speaker and a great photographer.
Yes, he is. He's a National Geographic photographer, and he gave a keynote speech at this international conference that we had here in Des Moines. And one thing that he said has always stayed with me. He said, in order to solve these environmental issues and to save animals, it's all hands on deck. And that we can't just be preaching to the choir, and we can't just be in these little exclusive groups of conservationists and wildlife biologists, but we need all hands on deck. And he said, we need journalists, we need carpenters, we need writers, we need scientists, we need business owners, and we need artists. Everyone has their role to play in solving these problems. And so that's why I'm so excited to talk about our topic today of how art can help, bring along societal change and help save wildlife. So again, welcome to our guest today. We're excited to have you here. And let's go ahead and just start by introducing yourselves and talking a little bit about Group Creative Services. And we'll go to Tiva and then Matt, and then we'll go to Julia.
Thank you. We are really excited to be here and just part of this collaborative approach that you're interested in as well. Matt and I started this consultancy in order to do exactly what you're saying, is to bring art into places it hasn't been before. We really feel like artists have the potential of being able to inspire and have creative solutions to places we haven't yet thought. I mean, we're interested in, particularly in the metro area, of how we can expand the role of artists, that they're not just there for adornments or for performative spaces to buy a ticket and go to a theater, that artists really can be part of looking at neighborhoods and how to build community in neighborhoods, or looking at derelict spaces and how to reimagine those spaces, to look at how to solve crime problems. I mean, really, to bring them into areas that need innovation and need creative problem solving and just new ways to imagine how we can be as a society. That really hasn't been a way that we've used art and public art in our community, and we're really interested in that, helping kind of non-arts organizations like the zoo find ways of collaborating with artists and helping them connect with the right artist for that type of approach. And so that was how we gave birth to this consultancy, is that we really felt like Des Moines area needed that way of connecting with artists and connecting with art.
Creative problem solving. I just jotted that down, and that's exactly what we do every day here at the zoo to help save animals in the wild. And so excited to hear more about that.
I think that's right. If you imagine, just go to a platitude, when we have difficult problems and we talk about problem solving, we immediately think about the out of the box solution. And what I like to think is that artists are like, what box? There is no box. We just very naturally and automatically look outside for whatever possible solution might bring a better result. Artists are also very good at just being natural connectors. They work across disciplines. They work with people in really interesting and exciting ways. And I think if you imagine, we don't look to shape our lives by only going to rallies or participating in causes that make us, for just a moment. But we're reading books, we're watching TV, we're doing all sorts of other things that are participating in culture that has been produced or is something that we can participate in. And that's really where our civic dialogues come from, is the way that we interact with each other, the way that we interact with the culture that surrounds us. And so when artists are producing that culture or the products that we look to and engage in, they're also helping, or they have the potential to help shape our civic dialogues. And this isn't really a matter about creating influence or telling people what they should or shouldn't believe. Rather, it's just opening new perspectives, opening new doors by giving people things that are fun or that are interesting to participate in, things that are a little bit familiar to us, but give us a platform to start to feel we're safe here, we're interested here. What else can I see from here? Where else can I go? And so by engaging in things that are public art experiences that are related to specific issues or civic matters, we're also giving people new avenues to explore these ideas on their own and in their own pathways, which just gives them a greater potential for enthusiastic participation and moving the issues forward.
I'm seeing so many synergies in just what you're saying with what I do every day in my conservation role here at the zoo, because many of the conservation issues that we are trying to solve just purely takes people to step back and think about the issue that's happening in a different way, instead of the way that we've always thought about it, instead of the way that we just do things, because that's the way that we've always done things. And so what a fantastic opportunity. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Matt. Julia, do you want to introduce yourself and talk for a few minutes?
I'm Julia Vogel, and I'm an artist, but I actually describe myself as a social sculptor a lot of the time, because my work is really dedicated to getting people to have shared lived experiences, social experiences, where they build something collective together with their input and their opinions about different social issues. So I'm not necessarily asking individuals to be artists all the time, but by sharing information, we build visual representations, whether that be, you know, a 20-foot chandelier made out of recycled plastic bottles, or I did a 6,000-square-foot floor mural in Boston with 1,800 people's input. My work is really about kind of getting people to do something fun and something that doesn't necessarily feel like civic responsibility, but by doing so, to get them to then have a more deeper understanding about some social issues. And I think everything that's been said, I completely, you know, resonates with what I do, and I think what's important about creating dialogue, fostering action on certain issues is about getting people unexpectedly engaged. And I think the artist's job is always to try and get people kind of caught off guard and then kind of question something that feels really familiar that can lead to dialogue and eventually maybe change their ways or change their mindset.
One of the things that I've liked in looking at that Pathways to Freedom project that you just did in Boston was the way in which it had kind of an incremental build, that there was participation in a number of stages along the way to the creation of that large mural. Is that something that you could talk to and relate it? I loved your phrase, unexpectedly engaged.
Yeah, I think what's really important to me is about listening to different voices and representing them, and that making sure that public art isn't just something that somebody thinks about in a room and then puts somewhere and hopes other people engage with it, but it's something that at every level is taking into consideration what the community is going to see every day. The piece that's placed somewhere feels like it's representational of them and their voices, and that can then inform a greater audience. So for Pathways to Freedom, I had kind of a lemonade stand that I would collapse every day and put in the back of my car and take to different community groups. And we went to 27 different community groups across Boston, from, you know, a high school to City Hall, engaging different communities. And really, you know, as you were saying earlier, Jesse, trying to kind of break out of preaching to the choir and trying to get different communities to engage with each other's voices, even if not literally in the collection, but then piecing that all together in one place, which is what I did in Boston Common, just taking all these voices and putting them together for people to see in contrast. And I think that sometimes just showing what other people think who are your neighbors and seem like strangers to you can be a connection to then have proper conversations with them. And I'm always excited about fun ways we can get strangers to talk to each other. And I think one of the key ways to do that is through shared experiences, especially fun and random experiences.
Yeah, you know, some of what I was reading to prepare for this morning, I came across some research by people named Deirdre Wilson and Dan Sperber, and they're talking about how to make different experiences relevant to people. How do you make them feel like the things that they're doing actually matter and therefore spur them into greater action? And the first thing is that they need to have some idea that they're going to have new conclusions that actually matter to them. And the greatest way to get to that is to make it extremely easy for them to fall into it. So who doesn't want to stop at a lemonade stand and get a colorful pin? I think, you know, when you can find ways that are fun and easy to engage, that really gives you a great starting space to start new conversations and hopefully give people like new interest in really taking action on something.
I'm continually just looking through the conservation lens as I'm hearing you guys talk about this. And I think that this is just so applicable to what we do. We always try to make sure to let people know that what they do in their life matters and it has an impact. And I love the fact of just trying to start conversations. And trying to get people to be engaged, make it easy, make it fun. A lot of the things that we have to talk about here at the zoo are kind of doom and gloom and have a very, very serious undertone to it. And so it's hard for us to push the reset button and to talk about it in a fun way. And I think that's really a huge battle for us that art could really help us tackle.
I think it's also, this is, I've been reflecting that this is maybe one of the smart things about stomping the straw is, you know, when we imagine entire continent-sized islands of plastic gyring around in the oceans, that's so much bigger than I can really imagine myself having an effect on, other than saying, no, I don't want a plastic bag every time I go shopping. But straws are something that are so ubiquitous and also so small. It's so easy to say no to that sort of thing and to learn to just be comfortable with drinking from a cup the way I do every day at home, and knowing that that is actually making some level of difference. I think making these things approachable and giving people small concrete steps is just such an excellent way to start.
I think a lot of it hinges on how important storytelling is to individuals, and that grasp at our emotional heartstrings, and that any experience that becomes an anecdote that people tell again has power. And I think artists' jobs are to kind of be a storyteller, and I think there's big, important stories to be told about animals' challenges today, as well as kind of the harm that plastic has, not just, you know, for animals, but across humanity and the earth. And making that a compelling story that somebody wants to see again changes people's perspective of something. And I think if you can tell a story well, you can have a much larger audience who will resonate with.
I couldn't agree more, and I just want to give a quick example, and then let's talk about some other examples of, you know, art installations that have helped incite behavior change and open up these conversations. But we have learned through research at zoos and aquariums that stories are the most powerful thing that can help, really inspire people. And so we know that people want to know the names of our animals, and they want to know what their favorite treat is and what their favorite toy is on exhibit. But I think one example of a story that I feel did not work and did the exact opposite is how we talked about climate change and how we all have that picture of the polar bear on the melting ice cap. And that does not, I feel, make anybody feel like they are powerful and that they can do anything to solve climate change. I think that makes people feel hopeless and helpless and has done quite a bit of damage. Mm-hmm. So exactly why we want to do campaigns like Stomp the Straw and those easy conservation actions. But let's go ahead and talk about some more examples of what you guys have seen with using art to save wildlife and help the environment.
By using art to perform storytelling, you give a more compelling story to tell, but you also give an experience that people share that they want to share further, because the experience that they may have, say, at the zoo around something like Stomp the Straw, or another experience that they might have somewhere else, is itself so compelling that the story that they want to share gets promoted even more greatly, because they're saying, I did this thing. You totally had to be there. It was so exciting and great. And so the message is amplified in that way. You know, it's something that wants to be shared in multiple ways, not only for its own merit, but also because of the way that it came to you.
It's human nature to share some fun, exciting experience that was new that you didn't expect to do at a zoo or some other place like that.
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to recognize that a lot of these things are happening when there is art involved. We get to inhabit this kind of imaginative place. We can make things where it's almost like, rather than, say, you may hear words like creative placemaking, it's almost more like imaginative placemaking. We're kind of starting to imagine and project ourselves into a better future, or a place where things that we want to have happen can happen. And that sort of positive thinking is really powerful in terms of motivating change. I did not prepare Julia to ask her if she has artists or art that she either has made herself or that she's seen that relates to this. I hope that maybe she'll have some things that she can share too. But a couple that I thought would be interesting to talk about. One was something done with Public Art St. Paul in the early 90s with an artist who's really quite well known named Mel Chin, and he did something called the Revivalist Field. In this project, what he did was he created this artful arrangement and planting of a variety of plants that was just kind of like a garden, but it was on a Superfund site in the Minneapolis, the Twin Cities area. And what this was is, in addition to being kind of a pleasant place to go and sit and look at plants, it was also a highly controlled scientific experiment looking to see if plants that are known as hyperaccumulators could in fact lift up and remediate soil and remove heavy metal from the soil. It's a little unclear now, 20-some years later, the extent to which it was. The early years of their experiments suggested that those hyperaccumulator plants were in fact very effective. 20 years down the road, new science indicates that perhaps they weren't as effective as we originally hoped. So that just goes to show what a continuing problem heavy metals in soil really still is. But I think it's really interesting to be able to look at that sort of imaginary space that is also a very pleasing space to go to visit, to just kind of feel reflective and quiet in, but also know that there's legitimate scientific research happening at the exact same time that this kind of imagination can reach to ideas of how do we actually make things better. It's not only about making things look better. It's not only about getting something lodged into people's minds. It's actually performing a function and trying to do something positive and good. And I think the very best public art, we can't expect that of everything. That's a tall, tall order. But it's always something that I think we should aspire to in everything that we do. So
bees and butterflies are very close to my heart, and we've got our Plant Girl Fly program where we encourage the planting of butterfly gardens, and I think every single one of those is a piece of art, and I love just looking at all the different colors and insects and flower blooms that we have in our backyard. And there's, you know, just to add on to that, multiple benefits, of course, of the pollinator garden to the soil, to increased filtration, to all the animals, but to people too. You know, there's research out that, you know, forest bathing is an example, and that it decreases depression. And there's even evidence saying that it decreases crime in cities to have these green spaces. And so I love just thinking about art and natural areas and those kind of projects as having all those multiple benefits.
I'd also use an example of a project that Matt and I worked on to kick off the water trails planning effort in Des Moines. A lot of us have heard about the really poor water quality in our rivers, but we have very little actual relationship, like a visceral connection to those waterways. So we had a temporary art installation that was just a wading bridge where you can, essentially it was a dock that was just in a U shape, and you walked out onto it, and then you could step down and essentially wade into the water and walk across the bridge that was partially submerged and then walk out. It was at most knee deep, depending on how tall you were. But I thought it was, and it wasn't that big or that long of a walk, but it was remarkable. I mean, people who had been working with us on the project for over a year knew about our water quality, and it wasn't until their feet were in it that they looked up at me and said, "I can't believe how bad this water looks." And it, anyway, we hear about this in our newspapers every single day, but it wasn't until they had this sort of contact, and it took an artist to sort of imagine, let's just get people like walking in the water with this wading bridge. So I think it's that sort of thing about giving people something that hits the heart is a visceral connection that data is backing up, but it just has to kind of come from a different direction.
Yeah, and I think there's something worth pointing out. That artist, by the way, is Mary Mattingly, who is based in New York. And one of her larger ongoing projects lately is called Swale. It's really worth looking up. It's quite beautiful. It's a floating food forest. She built a barge with a food forest on it that moves from port to port around New York City. But I think one of the things that was really interesting there, it was a little bit of a challenge because there were quite a few people who would look at this and say, I don't want to put my feet in that water. Why in the world would we do this? And they would feel as if that was perhaps a negative aspect to the sculpture. But I think it's kind of like if you're engaging in research, a negative result is still a result. And so it felt to me like it was extremely illustrative that people were looking at their water and connecting to it in a way where they were like, why do we have this? And I think that sort of thing can also spur people into action. Ideally, it's wrapped up in a pleasant experience, but I think, you know, it really pointed to how visceral we can connect to these things through art.
And I think that in general, just artists are very special people to be able to think outside the box and to be able to craft those experiences for people. And that our audience or the people that are interacting with the art all will be touched in a different way, will all have a different reaction. But the most important thing is to increase those opportunities and to increase that engagement. And so that's just really exciting. Julia, do you want to make some comments on this?
Something that you guys are touching on is this idea of literally putting someone in someone else's environment and experience and kind of getting people out of their comfort zone and placing them. And I've done a lot of work with the London Brain Project, who is three neuroscientists and myself, an artist, and we work with scientists as well as artists to break stereotypes about different neurological conditions. And some of the things we've taken on are about getting people to understand and have some real understanding about what happens, what life is like living with a neurological condition. And so we did a project with some artists on anxiety, where we basically had kind of an audio recording that people could put on in five different environments. So one was with their head in a box, and one of them was leaning against the wall, and one of them was balancing on one foot. And we were trying to physically bring them into these different environments in which anxiety impacts you. And then, but the recording that they were hearing was instructions that is kind of slowing down, you know, what happens to you when you go through different conditions and you have anxiety. And these are all collected from real stories from people living with anxiety. And I think similar to all these experiences you're talking about, is that until someone is actually in this headspace of understanding what something's like, it just feels like, oh, that could happen to anyone, or, you know, or that happened to that person, or that's happening to an animal that doesn't impact me every day. And until you experience that, you won't really understand. And I think it's really hard to get people's attention all the time, to get them to stop and kind of participate in these full experiences. But, you know, just like you were explaining about the water, once you do, it becomes kind of the thing of you have to tell other people because it's so strange and so different. And the amount of people who kind of went through this exhibition and then came out and said, you know, my friend tells me that she goes through anxiety, and I thought she was just stressing out a lot. This really just impacts her all day, every day. Once we can get more of a broader societal understanding of issues, then we can start talking about solutions. And I think exactly what you were saying about climate change is that until we're putting together positive, like, real narratives that are going to have societal impact, that will then get people off their feet to say, I want to do something about this, we kind of don't stand a chance. And I think so much of art is about broadening understanding. At least for me, it's about taking real stories that people, every individual can resonate with them. And it can be very simple. It doesn't have, you know, putting your head in a cardboard box with a simple 30-second audio recording is not so high-fi. But, you know, it can have a huge impact.
Thank you so much, Julia. And we didn't have nearly enough time to talk about the subject. We are so excited about this. Matt, I'm just going to give you a couple seconds to make a closing statement. And please let us know how we can find out more about Group Creative Services.
You can go to groupcreatives.com, and that will, at the very least, give you a route to connect with us. Our phone numbers and email addresses are there. And I think, you know, we're just really looking for ways to show that art can be more than we're used to seeing it be, that it's not just about making things look pretty or look better. Art can, in fact, have a function. It can build communities. It can bring people together, and it can help us learn how to talk to each other better.
That sounds great. And thanks for joining us today. And while we're on the subject of art, we should probably talk about, we don't talk about this hardly at all at the zoo, but we do have several art installations at the zoo, and a brand new one, actually. It's a group of seven chimpanzees, and It's very sort of contemplative, I think. Don't you think, Jesse?
It is. And it's neat because kids can, it's really neat because kids can go in and touch them and really experience them firsthand. And it's kind of off the path in a shaded area. So really should come out to the zoo and check it out.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. And join us next time for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.